Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew New York Rangers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, joined by my good friend and, I guess occasional co-host Michael Delzato at this point, we'll call him. But this episode is going to be a little bit of a postmortem. Avery, Cody, and I talked yesterday. DZ is going to give us that player perspective today. But before we do anything, this is presented by Bet Online, which is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. So DZ, where we will start, before we get into any Game 6 talk, can you kind of take us into the room and maybe the conversation of what's going on after that game? I mean, if there's one guy that can kind of talk about it comparably, 2-2 series in 2012, you guys lose game 5 at home, going to Jersey, and I know it's more of a heartbreaker because of the overtime game, but you lose game 6, and then all of a sudden your season's over. What is the vibe around the room?
Yeah, I mean, when you're at home, I think we talked about it last time, there's definitely some tension, not just in the locker room, but the building too. And when I was there for game 1, I felt the same thing. I mean, that's the beauty of playing in New York City and MSG is, you have the opportunity, a lot of great opportunities, but it's not the easiest to rise to the occasion. You always feel that tension. It's definitely a supportive crowd, but there's so much pressure on you at all times. So, losing at home, it's definitely a heartbreaker. Then you go on the road and, I mean, let's face it, they weren't the better team in the series. No. They shouldn't have won that series. I think if they did come out of that, instead of Kreider's jersey that everyone's talking about would be in the Raptors, it'd be Igor's, right? Yeah. And he played incredible. So I think, there's definitely a little bit of weight off your shoulders when you're going on the road, but at the same time with your backs against the wall and knowing that you weren't the better team in that series, it's not the most confident in feelings.
Mm-hmm. And, I don't want to focus too much on the past, but I like having your perspective here. I was probably too young to understand the game to where I do now in 2012, but did you guys feel like you went up against a better team in New Jersey, or did you feel like you kind of let something slip away? Because with this, it's a little different, right?
I agree. I think this, in the present now, I think Florida was the better team, in my honest opinion. Yeah. For us, I don't think there's a guy in that locker room from the Rangers that'll say that New Jersey was a better team than us. Uh-huh. What hurt us was going 7 games with Ottawa in round 1, we're the 1 seed, they're the 8 seed, then going another 7 games. I think by the conference finals, we were out of juice and they were not a better team. It was just a unfortunate situation for us. I still, to this day, I don't want to say it haunts me, but it's still frequently in the back of my mind, knowing that we did let it slip away. Yeah.
But this one, so this series, and here's why, I want to give you my Ranger fan perspective here. Like, this is kind of what I've been saying. This is the least disappointed I feel like I've been almost after a playoff exit, just because, you think back to 2022, more recent history, the Rangers have a little bit more control in that series against Tampa. They're up 2-0 in the series, up 2-0 in game 3. They piss that one away. They lose 4 straight. Last year, up 2-0 against the Devils in the series. They come home for game 3. Score the first goal. Everything's feeling good. It feels like they're in control. All of a sudden, disappears. This series, I never felt at one moment that they were really in control. If anything, after the second period of game 3 where Lafreniere scores that sick goal and Gaudreau scores a shorthanded goal, I'm like, oh, maybe there's a chance. But the third period of that game took everything out of it. So it seems like this one's a little bit easier to swallow from the fan perspective, but can you put us in the mind of the player and what are they thinking?
Yeah, I mean, losing is never easy. You always think, you always should think or have belief in your team that you're going to win, right? If you don't, that's probably a guy you don't want to have on your team. But that being said, you watch tape, you replay games, you replay plays in your head and watch over again on video. They were not the better team. And as much as there's different players or people that you maybe want to point fingers at for having not pulled their weight in this series, I don't think we gave enough credit to Florida. They did a fantastic job from the coaching, the job Paul Maurice did as far as, their systems. You look all over the ice, they were swarming the puck. The amount of times, probably count on one or two hands, the amount of times they were able to break the puck out clean, New York. So they did a great job. You know, again, they were a better team. You have to give them credit. But now, as fans and as we do, is okay, what's next? Who do we get rid of? Who do we bring in? How do we fix this? How do we make the team better? And you look at the team, they're in a win, you know, win now mode. And there may not be many years left to take advantage of this window with, you know, Igor's contract the way it is.
1 year.
With how he played. And next year is a huge year.
Yeah. And kind of speaking to that also with Florida and with the guys not delivering. You know, I think there's been all these conversations, and I think multiple things can be true, right? Like Florida did a great job at suffocating the Rangers' top guns. They did. But to that, you can also say that they choked, right? Like, I think when you have great players, they're only great if they rise above the occasion, right? So we didn't really see that. And that's why we're left with all these questions. But I still am in the camp of, I don't think Zibanejad's getting traded. I don't think. Go.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But this is a learning moment that, okay, what did we do? How do we be better? You have to learn from it. Again, their window to win is next year. Because after that, who knows what Igor is getting paid? You know, I'm assuming he's going to have another fantastic year with the cap going up the way it has been and trending that way. He's going to be making a lot of money. And as we've seen, year after year, it's hard to have these good teams or win with a majority of your cap going to four or five players, the Toronto Maple Leafs being a prime example. So I don't see these guys being gone, but it has to be addressed. You know, Zibanejad, not a great series. Panarin, not a great series. And understand there's good players on both teams. So there are players on Florida that their job is to shut down their top guys, but the same thing for New York. There's guys on New York, their job was to shut down Florida's top guys, and their top guys rose to the occasion. You know,
it wasn't like
maybe not the best production, but you still look
at impact was bigger than the production.
Exactly. It's not always about the points. It's bringing an impact to the game, right? Whether it's a penalty kill, the power play, 5-on-5, just creating shift after shift, sustained ozone time that allow you to when you don't have the momentum to get it back. And when you do have it, to hold on to it, right? And that's what I think Florida did a great job. All their guys bought in to winning that series. And there was a great clip I saw on Twitter. It was, I think Barkov was in a vulnerable position behind his net. And I forget who it was. If it was Kreider, Zibanejad had an opportunity to give him a good licking. Mm-hmm. And then you look at it from the other side of it, like Sam Bennett had an opportunity to blow some up. He took every opportunity.
Yeah.
Tkachuk, every opportunity to finish his check. These are the little things that, especially if you're going six or seven games, that, you know, look at Fox. Again, we've talked about that numerous times. After games 3, 4, these guys you don't want to go back in the corner. If you're getting hit every single time and you're already banged up, that's in the back of your mind. So to have the other team finishing every check, it's not an enjoyable feeling.
Well, that's something too, where I think there's a lot of arguing about the way this team should be constructed next year now. You know, you can look at it and say, the Rangers need to get more physical, which, you know, you can make that claim, right? Like there are a lot of guys who didn't finish hits, but also something that was noticeably and drastically different in this series, which I really think you'll have a better understanding of than anyone else, is getting the puck out of your zone cleanly. Like the Rangers need to need to strengthen the blue line this summer. Like say what you want about the physicality, that's great. But if they can't absorb what other teams throw at them, they're never going to win. So I think if you get more guys in the blue line that can break the puck out or at least skate it out or something, you know, I think that might be the direction to go in, as opposed to, you know, strengthening out the third and fourth line physically.
So it's an interesting point, because I couldn't agree with you more. That's a game that was breaking the puck out of your own. You can't hold guys up. It's impossible to give your defense, you know, extra half second makes the world of difference. I was, you know, specifically watching some of the forwards in their positioning as opposed to Florida. If you watch Florida, yeah, they were able to break it out clean, but the support they had on the puck, it wasn't always the prettiest. It'd be quick ups, but the center was coming through low and slow, and you have the weak side winger slashing across. So it made them look that much faster. The puck was moving so fast, and it allowed them to be predictable. And if you can be predictable for your line mates, it makes the game so much easier. It's not always having to make that little, you know, 5-8 foot saucer pass over a stick through the middle of the ice to allow an entry. If you're quick up pucks, especially in the playoffs when everyone's finishing checks, it allows you just to get in the other end and hopefully allow your forecheck to give you some sustained ozone time. So yes, there are some players who probably didn't make a lot of plays that they were used to in the regular season, which we talked about before, because of everyone finishing checks. To get half a second or one extra stick length is a matter of making a play or having it turned over and you're stuck in your end. And you go down the list, Fox wasn't his usual self. You know, Trouba, we've talked about numerous times. He was always looking for that big head. And I know it's a part of his game, but it felt like he was always chasing the game. He was always on the wrong side of the puck and way too many turnovers.
I mean, that goal.
I don't even know if it's worth getting into it. It's still shocking to me.
Even people who don't understand hockey can watch that play and be like, what the hell was that?
Yeah. What was he thinking? And then even the second goal against, it's a turnover. Very, very lazy back check by Panarin. Great stick lift by Lustorainen. Gets it to Lundell, who ended up being his check, who he lost the puck from. And then we know what happened in front of the net with Schneider not picking up his check. But it's a sequence of events, right? It may not always be the first mistake you make. It's the second or third when it's in the back of your net. So if you have numerous guys who aren't, you know, marking their players or doing what's expected of them, it's very hard to win.
Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately, like, something my old coaches said, I don't know if you've heard this term, but like, throwing good shit on the pile. You know, like, you don't need to go out there and score a goal, but if you throw good shit on the pile, eventually that pile is going to give you something positive. And this whole series, it was Florida consistently throwing good shit on the pile and the Rangers not. Like, that's kind of what it felt like. But just to finish up that last point about breaking the puck out, it felt like more than the other five games in game six, and maybe you can touch on this a little bit more. Granted, I was watching the game at a bar. what do we call it? You know, I wasn't a defenseman, but like, when you just flip the puck out and try to skate into it, like, is there a name for that?
That's just a high flip. Yeah. A lot of teams, because of the way teams break out. So for example, a team like Carolina, who basically they're 5 1-on-1s all over the ice early in the game. A lot of coaches will teach that. We're probably not going to get very many clean looks, but we flip a few pucks, excuse me, and allow our speed to skate in that. Maybe we get an odd man rush. Naturally, as a defenseman, you're going to back up and give a little bit of gap. So it's kind of like that chess match within the game where, hey, we'll flip a few out just to relieve some pressure until, you know, things open up and we can make some plays. But when you're doing that all night, you're essentially just giving the puck up. And
exactly.
Good teams are just going to regroup and come down your throat. And next thing you know, you're in your end for a minute, you change, and now you're not setting up the next group for success. They're coming on the ice to a fresh group coming down your throat again. And it's a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. So now to kind of like steer away a little bit, I mean, do you want to just break down game six? Like, do you want to look into what's in store this summer? Like, where are you at right now? How do you feel?
I think game six was the same as the other games for me. It was disappointing, you know, and again, Florida was the better team for sure. Throughout the whole series, they deserved to win, but some of the top guys not showing up, how is that addressed in the offseason? And like you said, they're not going to be traded. Right. But this is something that needs to be talked about internally. What's the coach staff management? Is it the style of play that may need to change come playoffs? Neutral zone systems, a very tight X's and O's guys, also a great motivator. But is there something that could have been done to help them out? I'm not sure. I wasn't in the locker room to know their systems. But from watching it, you know, typically his neutral zone system is forcing teams to dump the puck at minimum the red line. If they get in, you know, to the blue line, it's still a dump puck. And it just felt like Florida was getting in so easily. And I don't know if that was a product of the momentum switch, them being tired all the time, not being able to stand up, just being overwhelmed. I'm not sure. But is there something else that could have been done?
Mm-hmm. And I guess let's play armchair GM with you. I'm curious. Are you even like interested in doing that one day? Like, do you want to be front office guy? Like, I don't even ever asked you.
Maybe down the road. I do enjoy that side. I enjoy the understanding of players, you know, not treating everyone the same way. Like, they're essentially employees of yours, and understanding different personalities and knowing how to get through to different guys, but also being able to build something. You know, it's not always the most talented players, and especially in hockey with the hard salary cap. I'm so intrigued by that, is putting the right pieces together to create a winning team. So if I'm Chris Drury, and you said it best, is the back end, you know, you have to get one more really strong piece, a top four defenseman. What happens with Trouba? Do you move Trouba to
Trouba? Lindgren too. You know, Lindgren's contract's up.
Do you move Trouba to the third pair. The thing with Lindgren, I was speaking about this with my brother yesterday, actually, it's an interesting situation because everyone loves him. He's a warrior, right? And no one could take that from him. There's also the other side of it where I think he puts himself in vulnerable positions to be blown up a lot of the time. It's like once every three games, his helmet's flying off because he's getting blown up. But he's also playing with the Norris Trophy candidate as in Adam Fox. It's a blessing. It's a blessing to have a player of that caliber who's able to break out the puck and do so many great things. So he benefits from that. If you put him with a Schneider or another just a good player but an ordinary defenseman, I don't think we talk about him nearly as much as we do now being partnered with Fox. So I think that he shouldn't be making the money that we may be thinking of him as a defenseman because he's paired with Fox. And if I'm him, I know that too. Like, hey, I'm going to take a pay cut. I want this guy to be my partner for the rest of my career. It's something that works. They complement each other very well. So not everyone sees it that way. And I think you see it more often than not now, players going to different scenarios, different line mates, having to move, get their family set up. It's not that easy to do that, whether it's in season, off season. We've talked about this before. Jonathan Huberdeau, has a 100-plus point season in Florida. He goes to Calgary and struggles immensely. And so it's not that he's a worse player. He's not playing with the same guys he was used to. He was playing with for 10 years in Florida. He wasn't in a living in a situation where he was comfortable. He knew everyone. He knew the staff. He knew how to get around. It felt like home to him. This felt like a foreign place for him moving to Calgary. So it's not always chasing the money. Isn't always probably the right decision or the smartest decision. And if I'm him, I think, the grass isn't always greener. I think you enjoy the situation you're in now.
But would you say, and maybe this is a tough question to formulate, but like when you think of the Rangers' most important three defensemen, who are you putting in that three? Like, does Lindgren fall in that three?
I mean, he's 3A or 3B. It's Miller and Fox.
Like, I think Schneider at 22 years old
That's where
is.
I'm going. I'd say he's a mini Trouba. I think he's got a little bit more upside. What's the ceiling for him? We don't know. And will he ever get that position? So if Trouba's still there, right, and he's not given less minutes, will we ever see that side of him? Because you got, Fox and Trouba playing 20 plus minutes a game. His role and his minutes are going to be diminished or sheltered because you have guys above you. So at what point is When is the right time to give him the opportunity for the next step to prove that he's a everyday top four defenseman?
And honestly, this might be, I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think Schneider is almost just as physical as Lindgren is. It's just not as loud, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
I'd say he's physical. He goes to the dirty areas. He definitely.
No, but the actual visual of it, like when Lindgren either throws a hit or gets hit, it just like you're left with that memory. Like Schneider throws a lot of, and he fights, he's fought
Yeah,
too.
yeah. I mean, I'd say Lindgren definitely gets blown up. He's on the receiving end of
Receiving
a
it
lot more
more.
bigger hits than Schneider. I think strictly from size and putting himself in vulnerable positions.
But I didn't realize till like this morning, like I've kind of now become accustomed to Braden Schneider. When I thought it, or when I looked at it this morning, I was like, oh my God, it was only like his second full season in the NHL this
Yeah.
year. Like he was called up in January of 2022, which is like, I feel like it's so forgettable just because of how important of a role he's had on this team, you know? And
Yeah.
I'm thinking now, like if you're really gonna invest in a defenseman, come this summer or whatever, and there's some cap to go out and maybe find a bigger veteran or something, invest in Schneider and go get like an Edmondson, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Do you bring in a
And you know
third
Edmondson
pair?
from St.
Yeah,
Louis,
yeah.
right?
Do you bring in a third pair of veteran defensemen that may not be the
Well, they
player he
have Zach
once
Jones for one
was?
more year too, so.
Yeah, fair. And that's a guy that can move the puck for you. But at some point, I do think you need another veteran guy that is going to solidify your third pair and just be just a steady player. And God forbid an injury is to happen, he's able to step in the lineup as well, or move up the lineup, excuse me, and play in that top four role. Hopefully not for too long of a time, but you have someone with that capability where, which we talked about before in this past series, if you bring Zach Jones in and no knock against him, but God forbid someone else is to get hurt and he's slotted in the top four. I'm not feeling too confident that he's ready for that position in a playoff push, right? And I think you do need to give him an opportunity, smooth skating, he can move the puck, and something they definitely need. But I think you have to edge him in at a slower pace than, you know, I think Schneider may be ready for that next opportunity.
But Jones has also been around now for a couple of years, and he hasn't really been given that, like, you know what it's like when a coach like gives you that, like, okay, you don't have to worry about your roster spot. You are an every night guy. He hasn't really been given that. And the one time he got this year, you know, I think it was like, I'm blanking on the month, but I think the Rangers went like 10-2 with like Lindgren out and Trouba out, and Jones was in and he was playing well. He looked confident. He was probably at his best. But when you have that just mentally in the back of your mind, knowing when this team's healthy and if I make a mistake, I'm coming out of the lineup, it's very fucking hard to perform with that.
Exactly. When you're playing in that, you know, they call it like the flow state, right? When you're just playing and the game comes easy to you, it's like you're playing, you know, shinny as a kid growing up. There's nothing more fun than that. You're just making plays. And if you make a mistake, it's brushed off. You don't even think about it. So agreed. But is he ever going to get that? A player with his skill set, he's never going to get number one power play over Fox, right? No. So is he your second power play guy? But now as a second power play guy, he has to play in other situations. So is he a guy that you trust on your third pair that may have to play against the other team's fourth line? Not the biggest guy. And I know the game has definitely changed, but there's still some pretty big players on other teams' fourth line that are going to be fairly physical. Is that a guy that you want to put in that situation? And I'm not saying if there's a right or wrong answer here. This is stuff that internally they're going to be talking about. Where can we give him minutes? Mm-hmm. Right? Where fits for him? Are we sheltering him and only giving him ozone minutes? Okay. So that now does that take away from Fox, or are we going to put him in ozone situations with Fox and just giving him some offensive looks and protect him from giving any D zone looks where we may not trust him? Right. These are the conversations they're going to be having. Yeah. And I'm not sure there's a right or wrong, because a lot of your defensive minutes, you are going to go to your Miller, Trouba, or just specifically on the left side, Miller or Lindgren. Right.
And that's what happens when the season ends, right? We're just left with a ton of questions. And these are, you know, these are questions that, it's funny. Locked on Senators. I don't know if you know those guys. They're
good. Yeah.
But Linda Cohen tweeted before. Linda's a legend, obviously. About the Rangers doing whatever they can to go get Brady Tkachuk, like make that the goal of the summer. And you know Brady, I'm sure, pretty well. Brady is, you know, I've been calling him all year the people's captain. Like, to me, I know he's young, but like, he's everything you would want in a captain, I think, in the NHL. And I replied to Linda saying, I'm with you. And the Locked On Senators guys just go, shut up, Johnny. So that's why I was looking at that.
There's a lot of talk of him. He's not going anywhere. That'd be silly for Ottawa to give
for
him.
Ottawa.
Absolutely silly. Yeah. I mean, he's a franchise player. He's one of, I don't know how many now, Tom Wilson, a guy that's going to score 30 goals for you every year, fight, blow guys up, lead by example, do everything. He's a heart and soul guy. Those guys, you don't just find those year after
putting
year.
That to rest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. Okay. Big time. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So
I shouldn't have even entertained it. I apologize.
Well, I didn't plan on asking you about that, to be honest. I just got the notification. But there is a guy I'm curious about, and this is like probably premature to talk about, but maybe not. From what we've now seen from like Panarin and Mika in the playoffs the last couple of years, and what we saw in this run from Lafreniere, you know, we talk about the Rangers' core. Lafreniere hasn't necessarily been in that conversation, but maybe is now. Going into next season, when you think about the guy on the Rangers, it's Panarin, right? Like, it's just 120 points. Like, it's going to be him, rightfully so. But can you sort of cater the way this team is not constructed, but the way they play next year to forming Lafreniere into the guy? Because this year he answered all the questions about him.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I don't even know the question I asked, but you get what I'm saying.
No. I'm following you. You know, he surprised me, and I'm so happy for him. We've talked about him numerous times. I know you're a huge fan, and for him being a young player and thrown into the pressure of New York City, I lived it. It is not easy, and especially when you're that high of a pick, you're typically going to a rebuilding team, and you're going to a team that's expecting not just to make the playoffs, but to win. That's a lot of pressure, and he was never given the opportunity. Even this year, he doesn't play PP1. And with the players that they have now, I don't think he's ever going to get that position strictly off the structure of the power play, having the righties and everyone being at one-time threats. It's just how you score now. Mm-hmm. So similar to Schneider, these guys, when is the right time to now give him an elevated role? He's going to get those minutes, which he has 5-on-5, and he's going to play with, you know, in the top six. And be on the second power play, but when your power play is running as hot as they typically do, you're not going to, you're maybe get the last 30, 35 seconds. You typically get one opportunity, maybe two if you're lucky. So when is the right time to allow him to take the next step for him to be a core guy or maybe even be the guy? I don't know. I don't think you can switch up the power play. I just don't see that happening. So what happens?
But that's a great point that you just made, because the questions were, when will Lafreniere take the next step, right? Like, when is he going to flourish? When is the player going to do it? The player did it. So now when is the team going to allow him to flourish? Like, that's now probably a narrative or conversation, right? Because you have this guy knocking on the door. And I think anyone who's watched the Rangers power play knows, like, he should be on it, but who the fuck do you take off?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is.
And the answer is no one. The answer is no one.
Right. But how could you start another season and leave him off of it? Like, I don't know what you do. You try to maybe just balance out two units. Like, how?
No, because now you're paying, you know, Panarin at 11 plus, and he's like, we're balancing two units.
Yeah.
He's not going to be happy. The Benajab making whatever the number he is, Fox, same thing. He's not going to be happy. Yeah. So you got, you know, these guys all making 8 plus 8, 9, 11 million. They're not going to be happy balancing two units. They want to stack one, and that's what you're paying them that type of money for. So I don't think that's the right answer. And unfortunate for him, and I'm on his side. I'm on Lafreniere's side. Like, he has earned the right to get a bigger opportunity or be PP1, whatever it may be. I don't think you can give him more 5-on-5 minutes. You know, he's not going to be a PK guy as an offensive guy. You don't want those minutes either. You'd rather not be blocking shots. You want puck touches. So when is the team going to give him an opportunity? And I don't think you can give him one on PP1, as much as it hurts to say. You can't break that up. Again, the structure of how they're set up with their righties, completely different when you have a lefty on that unit.
So to that as well, I just want to look up Lafreniere's like contract situation. He is an RFA after next season.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's not like you would like go out looking, but
If you're the team, you're probably like, hey, well, I don't want to give him PP1 minutes this year either. And maybe puts up 70, 80 points. Yeah,
they cost
a contract year. Yeah. And he's got arb rights now too, right? So it's not, they're going to do their best to hold on to this team as long as possible. And we've talked about Igor. That's the biggest one. Igor's contract coming up. Who knows what he's making? It's
I think Molly Walker actually. Yeah, Molly, who's a friend of mine, obviously does a great job covering the team for the New York Post. I think she just put out an article that the number, I just want to double check here, but I think the number was like 12 million is even in the
question. I know, but which won't happen. You look at other goalies other than, I think it was Carey Price before, the amount of goalies that are making 10 plus, you can't have it now, especially most teams are going in the goalie tandem, right? If you're making a deep run, you can't have goalies playing 65, 70 games a year. So they're going into that split with a backup and having a veteran guy, which they usually do in New York. You just can't pay goalies that much. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. He's definitely earned it. But that affects the makeup of your team big time.
I'm trying to find the actual quote with the number. Wait, also I'm seeing a Brian Boyle tweet now. This is funny. Sorry, I don't mean to.
No. What's Boiler saying? Anything?
So this was a quote, I guess, Boiler had on the post game. This is the quote. Every single year, the same thing wins. Defense. A certain element of skill, yes, but it's will, it's defending, it's playing large. People playing hard, strong, physical hockey, and just killing the spirit of the other team. Some guy replied, no. And the guy said, you have to be an absolute moron for your takeaway to be, we need bigger, tougher defenders. I'm being very charitable and kind. And then Boiler goes, you're a moron if you think this doesn't win every single year, because the same thing wins every single year. Big boys who move well and you can't get near their net or slot. Heavy teams advance every year. I'm not going to disagree with Brian Boyle.
Well, look at Edmonton. You got Nurse, Kulak. Yeah.
Broberg.
Broberg, who's done a great job stepping in. Dehanier, I'm not French, so I'm probably butchering his name.
I think it's Dehanier.
Yeah, which he's not
against the guy right now,
but he was before. Yeah. Ekholm, Bouchard. These are all they're big boys. As much as Bouchard is producing offensively, he's still a big boy. It's not like he's an undersized defenseman. Mm. Florida, Forsling, Ekblad, big boys. Kulikov, big boy. Montour can skate and is somewhat physical. even Ekman Larson. These are like veteran guys that are playing 10 plus years, right? These are
Nikola.
And yeah, massive.
Yeah, beast.
So how do you argue that? And these are the two teams that are playing. Look at Vegas last year. Look at their back end. It was impossible to get to their net. McNabb, Martinez, Petrangelo, Theodore. These guys are all sort of big boys. So I agree with Boiler, and you know, you have these conversations every day. It's like the game will continue. It's like every 5 years the game changes, right? It gets faster, more skilled. You see guys doing stuff that you would never imagine. But teams that win, that'll never change. Yeah. The game of hockey is the game of hockey. So Boiler has a great point there. I couldn't agree with him more.
I love that he's like fighting back too. He's new into the media thing, you know. He came on our morning show and actually got attacked for the clip that we used of him. You know, he came on and said that like Lafreniere has been better, or like Rempe has made other guys better just by being there. And like the stats when like Rempe joined the team, like Lafreniere did, you know, it's not necessarily what's the saying? It's like coincidence versus, you know, the phrase I'm thinking of. But yeah, I don't know. Boiler is just, he's a great guy. I fucking love that guy. But yeah, any kind of like final thoughts you want to bring up? I mean, we're going to continue to have these conversations through the summer. You know, exit day is still not announced yet. We haven't gotten the email of when it will be. I imagine after exit day does happen, we'll have some comments to go over and to talk about and just feel the vibe of the room. But any final thoughts, DZ, you got before we kind of wrap this thing up?
I think it's just the top guys not performing again. I hate to shit on Panera, you know, as amazing of a career he's had and the things he's done this season.
Such a likable guy too. I love
exactly, that. Exactly. He's got personality. You want to love the guy, and he's great. He's not a dud to interview, right? It's when we're noticing a trend, right? And what I wonder is someone in the locker room stepping up and saying something to him, or is he one of those untouchable guys? Cause he's making what he makes. He's put up 100+ points. Who's holding the guys accountable to say, hey, we need more. Right. And is Trouba that guy? It's hard to do it when you're not performing well too. Right.
Yeah.
I think when you were struggling as much as he did this series, I'm not sure he's the guy either. So my thing is, I loved watching the team. I think they were so exciting to watch this year, but like most fans,
well, I guess let me ask,
disappointed with how it
is.
Is it a failure? Absolutely,
it
is. When you have a team like that with the year they had, absolutely, it's a failure. You're expected to win, and when you're playing for an organization, an original six team, and the pressure of the New York Rangers at MSG, you're expected to win. So it is nothing short of a failure.
But also with that, you set a standard for next year and you kind of built a foundation, right? Like, you know, this team needed somewhat of a culture change after they let Gallant go. And I think Laviolette accomplished that, you know, and I think that's something to be happy about or proud of, and something you build on, you know?
Agreed. And I think, and myself included, I think we're very hard on them because you wanted and expected them to win. We're not giving enough credit to Florida. So I'm disappointed because I think there were some guys who underperformed. Hey, if they did perform, would they have won? Who knows? We'll never know, right? So I think we're just calling a spade here. And I do agree they took massive steps. And I think Peter did a phenomenal job. Their whole coaching staff did. But it's no secret. You look at the roster, how it's made up, and expiring contracts next year is it their last year to potentially win with what they have because of Igor and the potential large raise that he has earned, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a lot of questions to be asked, a lot of questions to be answered this summer. And that's, it's not what I look forward to. I fucking hate talking about all this stuff. Like, I just want to talk about the game, but yeah, I'm not looking forward to all the, who should we sign on July 1st? You know, like all this shit.
Is there a guy other than the outrageous Brady Tkachuk take that you think the Rangers should sign or prioritize?
Honestly, I'd have to take a deeper dive at the free agent list. Like, I haven't really gone to that point yet. I'm still in grieving.
Yeah.
a big physical defenseman that can move the puck.
Yeah. There's definitely needs and wants, but then you have to go into the business side, right? Of what are they asking? How much money? What's the term? Does it fit in our long-term plan? Does it affect the growth of Zach Jones? Does it affect the growth of Braden Schneider, right? There's so much more that goes into it. And I think that's the part, when you asked me before about being a GM, I think that's the part that's really exciting. It's not just, oh, we want this player, we're going to go and get him. There's repercussions for every signing, every draft pick. There's more that goes into it. And it's, It's understanding that, being able to be, one or two steps ahead.
No, yeah, you make great points. It's always fun talking to you, and I got nothing else, so I guess we'll just kind of wrap it up here. But you're the man, and maybe we'll talk, I guess, after July 1, or what do you think?
Yeah, after July 1, let's see the moves they make, and let's talk about our bold predictions.
All right. Sounds good, DZ. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, brother.